WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Christine Vachon, is an independent producer with a very impressive record. Her films include I Shot Andy Warhol, Kids, Safe, Go Fish, and the new film, Stonewall. Stonewall is a fictionalized version of Martin Duberman's book about the event that was a turning point in the gay rights movement. In June of 1969, police raided a bar called the Stonewall Inn in Greenwich Village that was a popular gathering place for drag queens. During this raid, the bar's patrons fought back and a riot broke out, signaling the start of a more militant phase of gay rights. The two main characters in the film are a drag queen who changed names from Hector to La Miranda, and her boyfriend, a newcomer to New York named Maddie Dean. In this scene, La Miranda has been called to the draft board after showing up in a miniskirt. She's referred to a psychiatrist. La Miranda is too terrified to go, so Maddie Dean puts on her outfit and goes in her place.
Hector Julio Duarte.
Hector.
La Miranda, doctor. La Miranda Carides.
But you weren't born La Miranda, were you, Hector?
You weren't born a doctor, but you qualified.
And you're now what, a man or a woman?
Oh, doctor, how 50s you be. Me, I'm living in the other state, between maleness and femaleness.
Which is?
Fabulousness.
Hector? Do you want to fight for your country?
Oh, I want to fight, Doc. I want to fight for love, liberty, and the Constitution. I want to fight the Kong, the Ruskies, you, your mom, your pop, and the whole house of un-American activities. I want to kick the world's ass, and I don't need you to let me. You're forcing me.
The director of the film Stonewall, Nigel Finch, died of AIDS while the film was being completed. I asked Christine Vachon if she knew Finch had AIDS when she decided to produce Stonewall.
Well, I knew he was HIV positive, and he was always very open about that. And when we first started talking together, his lover was dying of the disease. He was so vital that it didn't occur to me, and frankly, I don't think it occurred to him, that he wouldn't make it through the post-production process.
Now, do you have to worry about things like insurance? I know in major motion pictures, you have to get insurance on the actors and the director. And if somebody's sick or prone to being sick, sometimes insurance is very hard to get. Is this an issue for you?
Well, on Stonewall, I insured the actors. And Nigel didn't, I mean, he didn't want to go through the what he felt would be a pretty humiliating process of even having a doctor examine him. So I just didn't bother. The BBC said to me, well, I assume you have a ghost director standing by. And I just said, oh, yes, of course, but I didn't. And I don't know what I would have done if he had gotten too sick to direct. It didn't occur to me.
It really didn't occur to you?
He was very, you know, he was very, very healthy. I don't really know how else to put it. It was sort of like, you know, yeah, I mean, I know lots of people who are HIV positive who are also very, very healthy, and it wouldn't occur to me that they, you know, I wouldn't think of them as just like suddenly collapsing. But in a way, that is what happened to Nigel.
When did he start to get sick?
The last week of shooting, he started complaining of vertigo. And at that point, we were shooting in La Miranda's apartment, so it was all like relatively contained set, and he didn't have to move around much. So no one really noticed, I don't think. You know, I only knew because he told me. Then he went back to London, cut short. He was going to go take a vacation, decided not to, went back to London, and was diagnosed with PML, which is a very pernicious brain virus.
And how long after that did he live?
That was in early January, and he died February 14th.
What was the state of the movie when he died?
It was about halfway between a rough cut and a fine cut. I mean, it was pretty much in the condition that you've seen it, except that the music had not yet been composed, and there were probably a few other little adjustments that hadn't been made yet.
Now, he asked you and executive producer Anthony Wall to complete the film. Did he leave his wishes about what he wanted done?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, the film really followed the script. We also were able to start cutting while we were shooting, which is a pretty common practice. And now with the advent of nonlinear editing systems like the Avid or Lightworks, it's, you know, it's really easy to do. So he already had some sense of what we were doing, you know, of how the film was taking shape. You know, it was, we moved all the editing equipment into his house, even when he was too sick to come near it, just so that he would feel that it was all happening, you know, in his universe.
Were there decisions about the film that you had to make without the benefit of Nigel Finch, and you really weren't sure if you were making the right decisions for him?
Well, the thing is that usually when I'm cutting, when I'm in post-production on a film, there's a dialogue that happens in the editing room, which is between me, the director, and the editor. And in that kind of triangle, you know, bonds arise, you know, it becomes two against one, and then one against two, etc. But it's a healthy debate that just keeps going and going and going, and eventually, I think, produces the best possible movie. And in this case, one of those pieces was missing, and that was really hard because, you know, a lot of things happen in the editing room because of disagreements and because of, you know, a director saying, no, this is what I intended, and a producer saying, yeah, but this is a better cut, and then one convincing the other, and that was really tough.
Do you worry that you did things that he wouldn't have wanted you to do?
I don't really worry about it. I think we made a really good movie, and I really tried to be very... to be pretty stringent about anything he'd ever specifically told me he wanted. But I also knew, you know, that often what you want at one part, you know, one part of the process, you change your mind when you actually see how it all works together. There were scenes that I knew Nigel liked, but that I also knew he would cut if he knew they didn't work. So I didn't feel any qualms about cutting them.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Christine Vachon, producer of the new film Stonewall. Is Stonewall rated?
You know what? I don't think it is.
Is it going to be?
It will have to be rated eventually to go out on video.
But it doesn't have to be rated for theaters?
No.
What,
no, it doesn't.
Why aren't you submitting it for a rating for theaters?
Again, that is the distributor's decision, and my guess would be they didn't want to pay the $5,000.
Is that what it costs to submit
it? Yeah.
Have you ever had a quarrel with the ratings that your movies have been given?
Only one time. We didn't rate I Shot Andy Warhol. We had a quarrel over Swoon and over Poison, actually. So twice.
And what was the quarrel?
In Poison's case, it was when it went to video. The MPAA wanted us to cut two scenes in the film significantly. And we ended up making a compromise and making some of the cuts, and the film went out on video as unrated, an R-rated version, and an NC-17 version. And with Swoon, what happened was the film was rated R. Oh, no, the film was rated, they wanted to rate the film NC-17 unless we cut a shot of the two boys fully clothed, where one was lying on top of the other and making suggestive movements. And they told us unless we cut that shot, they would, you know, give us an NC-17, which the distributor was very unhappy about. During that whole, you know, discussion, I went to see Basic Instinct, which was rated R, and couldn't really believe that we were even having that discussion when that film could be rated R.
My guest is independent film producer Christine Vachon. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is independent film producer Christine Vachon. Her films include I Shot Andy Warhol, Kids, Safe, Go Fish, and the new film Stonewall. Christine, would you describe what your role is as a film producer of independent movies?
It's, in a way, like in a big sense, I guess what I do is really sort of provide a kind of engine or locomotion to a project. Usually a director comes to me extremely early on when the film is an idea. Say, you know, I've been thinking I want to make a movie about X. And then I, depending on the situation, I either try and find some money for the director to actually write the script. I tend to work primarily with writer-directors, although occasionally I'll work with directors directing other people's material. So I might try and find the money to finance the script writing, as I said. But really what I start doing at that point is trying to conceive of the film as a film, even while it's still in that tiny little, you know, in that infancy. I start trying to think about the best home for it, you know, for financing, about the best sort of package to put together, what the budget will possibly be, how to bring it out into the world so that people will respond to it and respect it. And, you know, as we go along, it's just more of that, you know, putting it together and trying to, trying to keep the big picture in my head at all times so the director can concentrate on the actors and the camera.
Now, what kind of budget range are you most comfortable in? You've produced no budget type movies, but movies where the budget is so low and you hardly have any, and no one expects to make any money. People just want to make resume films. But then you've done things like Kids, which cost, it's considerably more. I don't know what the figures
were.
It
cost $1.5 million.
That's pretty low, but it's not credit card money.
Right.
What's the most comfortable range for you? And what are some of the differences between working for next to nothing and working in the over $1 million mark?
You know, I think that whatever your budget is, you're always convinced it's not enough, whether it's, $100,000, $1 million, $5 million, or $20 million, or $40 million. You know, the whole budgets are there to keep so that you can think up solutions to get around them. I don't know what budget I'm the most comfortable working in. Each film presents different problems and different. You know, I'm going to be doing Todd Haynes's next film, which is about glam rock, and we'll probably be doing it in the $6 to $8 million range, which seems like a lot compared to Safe, which cost $1 million. Except to do this particular script for $6 to $8 million will be challenging because it's a very stylish and it will require a lot of elaborate production design. The hardest budgets, I think, are those ones that are just like between $1 million and $1.5 million, because when you have no money, like a couple $100,000, the answers are always real easy. It's like, well, you don't have any money, so if you got to pay for it, you can't have it. End of discussion. When you have a little bit of money, like $1 million or $1.5 million, then you really have to think, every single decision you make is implicating every other decision. And that can sometimes be very difficult.
Your movies rely on independent theaters, art houses, to book them. Do you think that scene is a strong one now? Or do you think that those independent houses and the art houses are in fragile health?
I don't know if they're in fragile health. I do know that there's a lot of movies competing for screens, and that's really difficult because, especially independent films really rely on being able to sit somewhere for a while and become the movie that, people are talking about, that you go to see because you're in the office and someone says, oh, did you see that little movie? It was so strange and so interesting. And then you decide to go see it. The problem is that most screens are so booked up that a movie only gets to stay there for a few weeks. So I wouldn't say that they're in fragile health necessarily. I would say that the smaller distributors' access to screens is becoming a little bit more difficult.
Now, I understand your father was a photographer for Look magazine.
Yes.
Did that inspire you at all to think visually?
I guess it must have, we were photographed a lot when we were younger. And I was very aware of the fact that he was, that he constructed images for a living. But I think, I think what influenced me more in a way was the fact that I was lucky to grow up in the 70s, which I think was the last real heyday of American movie making. It's inconceivable now that a movie like Midnight Cowboy could win the Best Picture Oscar. And I was lucky enough to grow up in New York City, and I could walk to the movie theater, and I did so every week.
What kind of theater was it?
It was called the Olympia, and it was on 106th Street in Broadway, and your feet stuck to the floor. But, you know, it was the kind of theater where you could go and, like, watch the movie three times.
I think in the 70s there were a lot of movies that had really troubled endings. You know, The Conversation, Taxi Driver, even though
right.
Taxi Driver has that little happy ending, Coda, you don't really believe it.
No, you don't at all.
And even the Godfather films. But now it seems that movies have to have a happy ending, and even if it has an unhappy ending, there's going to be some kind of focus group that decides it doesn't like the unhappy ending, and it's changed to a happy ending.
Yeah.
Do you feel any pressure to have a happy resolution at the end of films?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't feel the pressure. I do and I don't. I mean, you know, films with bleak endings get less people in the theater's seats to see them.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be what people are what people are figuring out. On the other hand, you know, I'd never want to be. I would always want to be true to the, you know, to the film's integrity. So I've never suggested to a director that he or she change the ending of a film to make it more uplifting.
Do you use focus groups to test your movies?
No, but I do test screenings of the film between a rough cut and a fine cut, where I recruit people usually by passing out flyers at the Angelica Theater, and.
The Angelica Theater is a theater in New York that shows a lot of independent movies.
And I, you know, have them watch the film and then fill out questionnaires for us. And that tends to help us. I mean, my assumption with every movie I make is that there's going to be a certain group of people who just aren't going to like it under any circumstances. But I figure at the Angelica, that's where the majority of my audience would go to the movies. And they can just point things out to us in those questionnaires that we might have lost sight of, things that are confusing or that aren't working, or that if they were just adjusted a little bit, would be very successful.
Give me an example of something that you changed because of an insight you got from one of these groups.
Let's see. Well, I think when we did that with Go Fish, it was really, really... We did a lot of recutting at the beginning of the film to make it shorter. When we did it with Swoon, we realized that nobody could tell Leopold and Loeb apart. So we added some voiceover that would help distinguish the two. I'm trying to think of other examples. You know, it's usually that kind of thing. I mean, I wouldn't come out of a group like that and turn to my director and say, see, we've got to, like, you know, reshoot those last two scenes so that everybody thinks that, you know, she really got away from the killer. That's not really what they're for. They're more to sort of hone in on problems that are sort of, you know, lurking there that can be fixed.
What do you have coming up in the near future?
Well, I just finished production. I'm in post-production on two films. One is called Office Killer, and it was directed by the photographer Cindy Sherman. And it's a horror film. And Miramax picked it up for distribution, and I'm not really sure when they're planning on releasing it. The other is called Kiss Me, Guido, which is a lighthearted romantic comedy starring Nick Scotti and Anthony Barilli. And that's also in post-production, and I'm hoping we'll be able to take it to the Sundance Film Festival. And then I'm doing Todd's glam rock film. Tom Kalin is working on a script about Robert Mapplethorpe and Patti Smith that we hope to go into production on next spring. Dan Minahan, who co-wrote I Shot Andy Warhol, is working on a script about Halston, the fashion designer, which we're doing with Fox Searchlight. And I believe, oh yes, I'm also working with Mary Herron, the director of I Shot Andy Warhol, on a film about pinup model Betty Page.
Well, Christine Vachon, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Christine Vachon is an independent film producer. Her new film is Stonewall. This is Fresh Air.